Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is the son of Francis and Edith Schaefer, founders of the Labri community in Switzerland in 1955. It was a hippie evangelical commune that many a young seeker passed through in subsequent years, and where our guest was raised according to what he calls the doctrine of fundamentalist Christianity. His father was an evangelical Christian theologian, philosopher, and Presbyterian pastor who passed away in 1984. Well, that was then, this is now. Something happened to Frank Schaefer, and he became an outspoken critic of many of the religious and social issues he at one time fully supported. I've asked him to join us today to talk about what has changed and what has stayed the same, especially in the light of religious liberty. Frank is an author, film director, screenwriter, and public speaker. Here's a hint of things to come. One of his books is entitled, Why I Am an Atheist Who Believes in God. Frank Schaefer, welcome to Life Quest Liberty.
Thank you, Charles.
Let's start with the past. Since you were there when much of this happened, what were the origins and goals of the religious right when Jerry Falwell birthed it in 1979?
Well, if you're referring to Jerry Falwell specifically, first let me say I knew him well, and I spoke from his pulpit twice as a young nepotistic sidekick to my father, Francis Schaefer.
Yes.
And that's not an unusual phenomenon in the evangelical world. A lot of the God business turns into family businesses, sort of like a British royalty / North Korean version of passing the torch.
Yes, okay.
And so I found myself in my early 20s with audiences that were vast for someone that age, not because I had earned that, but because my dad was having chemotherapy or was not available. He was battling cancer at the time, and so they would get me. And in the lingo of the evangelical world, the mantle had passed. The son was a good public speaker. God's hand was clearly on me, quote unquote. And so I would be with people like Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, and the rest of that group doing things at that age that normally people would have to be a bit older to get to. And so I had a kind of a inside view of the formation of the religious right. So when you're looking at Jerry Falwell, he was a segregationist in the 60s, and essentially latched on to the anti-abortion cause in the late 1970s. At first, like so many evangelicals, he actually was pro-choice. Dr. Criswell, who was the president of the Southern Baptist Convention and pastor of First Dallas Baptist, told us that he didn't believe life began until a baby draws its first breath. Dr. Billy Graham, the famous evangelist, refused to appear on Dad's platform with Dad and Dr. Sievert Koop, who would become Ronald Reagan's Surgeon General after we made a film series called Whatever Happened to the Human Race, which became the beginning of the Protestant evangelical involvement in the pro-life issue. So when you ask why and how this all formed, a lot of it was to do with fundraising. A lot of it was to do with white nationalism and segregated white schools and a lashing out at federal and judicial rulings that went against that. A lot of it had to do with homophobic agendas and so on. But I think the bottom line was that people like Jerry Falwell and Dr. Dobson of Focus on the Family and others were always looking for, quote unquote, the next hot issue with which to rev up their listeners and their viewers and their supporters, keep them on the edge of their seats, get them sending in that next $25 check, as these guys would save America from, fill in the blank, feminists, gays, whomever it might be. And that's really, most honestly, how this came about. Now, when you get down to the rank and file we were all speaking to, there were not only a lot of sincere believers and very good people, but there were folks who were in it for the right reasons, in the sense that they were trying to really mirror what they believed to be following the teachings of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. When you get up into the level of the big-time leaders, today, for instance, with Franklin Graham and the others, then it was a completely different deal. And that was, there was always a calculation about what would work, where the money would be raised best, and so forth. So two things were going on. A lot of sincere belief on one hand, and then a leadership that in the most part was utterly corrupt all the way to its core, even then. let alone today with its access to Donald Trump and so forth. That's a thumbnail of how I see it, as someone who was there from the beginning.
We're talking with Frank Schaefer today. Frank, what was the main event or motivation that moved you off of that podium, from behind that pulpit, that moved you out into areas that before that time you had not gone?
The way I would put it is like this, and this may come off as a little odd. It was more to do with aesthetics than with morality. You know, I can remember distinctly once being the keynote speaker at the Southern Baptist Convention to 23-some thousand pastors in the early 1980s when my dad couldn't make it. And suddenly realizing that I was heading into my late 20s, that this was going to be the first day of the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. None of these folks that I was talking to were the kind of people who liked the movies I liked, or were into the art that I was into, or enjoyed the kind of music that I liked. The cultural background that I had in Europe growing up as Francis Schaefer's son really had very little to do with white, middle-class American Christianity of the right-wing, Jerry Falwell sort. Mm-hmm. The only thing that brought Dad to their attention was early books of his, like The God Who Was There and Escape from Reason, that became bestsellers before he got into politics. And then later, the issue of abortion, which after it caught fire with a lot of help from Dad and myself, Dr. Koop and others, became a political issue that Ronald Reagan started using, for instance, when he switched from being pro-choice to being anti-abortion, and all the others that went with this. And so, for me, as a younger man, realizing that our success in a way was going to doom me to move in these circles forever, and I frankly did not like these guys, his fakery, his flakery. I didn't see spending the rest of my life doing that. So that's sort of one thing. The second was my marriage. My involvement with the religious right, having been raised as a sort of a domineering Calvinist evangelical that thought that men should be in charge of everything, this just made it worse. And I was on the road 6 months a year. When I would come home, I would always be angry with myself, my family, and so forth and so on. I happened to actually be in love with my wife, and it was no picnic realizing that the involvement with the kind of people I was with and the strains it was putting on my own life, wanting to go in different directions, was turning me into a world-class jerk. And I would be angry. I would be lashing out. And essentially, something had to give. So basically not liking who I was becoming in this circle, and the very success getting offered places on the board of all these big ministries and so forth, and realizing that if I wasn't careful, this is who I was going to be. And then I started questioning the theology itself. Did I believe this stuff? Did I really believe that we were right on the politics, for instance, about gay issues or feminist issues or access to abortion and these other things? And frankly, as I looked at the issues in and of themselves, outside of being part of the movement myself, it all began to disintegrate. And so by the time I was done and wrote my memoir, Crazy for God, I was essentially signing my own death warrant, as it were, for further involvement. There was no way back after I did this. So that's where I was at. I basically burnt my bridges and then tried to figure it out from there.
So are you saying that the God that you grew up with, that was not the same God you were walking with as you moved into these other areas and where God was supposed to be walking, but apparently he wasn't? Is that what I hear you saying?
I don't think I grew up loving any God. I think I grew up sitting trying to get through hour and a half long evangelical sermons and feign interest and eventually look in myself and say, what's wrong with me? Why don't I feel more fire for this? The first thing that really fired me up in terms of our own involvement in these issues was, first of all, I love my parents. They were good people. Dad was not a flake. He was not a thief. He was not of these folks' ilk. and really comparing them to him. I mean, Dad worked on the edge of his bed in an old rocking chair on a tea tray. He didn't even have a desk. We didn't even own a car. You know, the first time I ever flew first class in my life is when we were out on the road and billionaires, you know, like Rich DeVos of Amway, were starting to foot the bill for our films. And Dad and I were embarrassed by that sort of thing. So the shock of coming from this humble little ministry, which no matter what you think of the theology, was authentic, and suddenly stumbling into the big time of the God business in America was a shock to my system, from which I did not recover. So I never learned to love the evangelical American God. The God that my parents served was a much more humble thing, and really was about reaching out in an open home environment of Labri, where people were camping out on the floor in sleeping bags. My dad was working in his bedroom. He was a faith ministry, and through the fruit of his books becoming bestsellers, and then because of the documentaries I produced and made and directed and distributed, and the millions of dollars we raised with those things, that's what changed it all. So the pity is that the majority of my father's ministry was a straightforward evangelical ministry. It's only the last 7 or 8 years that took this political tinge, which actually shaped the America we're in now, laid the groundwork for Donald Trump becoming president by turning the abortion issue into the litmus test upon which all of this other stuff has turned. And so I wasn't brought up in this environment. We crashed into it, and I rejected it.
So if your dad could talk to you now, and if he could look around and at your life and see what you're saying and what you're thinking and what you're writing, he would be on board with that then?
He would not agree with a lot of things I'm saying in terms of my conclusions about the Bible. For instance, I do not believe the inerrancy of Scripture, as he would put it. I don't think it's literally true. I think there are huge chunks of mythology in it. But when it comes to analyzing whether you want to spend the rest of your life serving the kind of political right-wing machine that evangelicalism has become, he would be thrilled that I had jumped and would have been horrified if I had stayed in. My dad would have slit his wrist if he came back and found that I was a new Ralph Reed, for instance, leading something like, you know, the prayer breakfast with Donald Trump, trying to dress him up and make him look presentable. My father would have been horrified by that. So if the choice had been me going with the program as it developed or me jumping out, clearly, if anybody who reads his non-political earlier works, which were about philosophy and art history and all the rest, he would not have in any way fit in this environment.
We're going to continue our conversation with Frank Schaefer on our next program. Frank, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate that. Frank Schaefer is an author, film director, screenwriter, and public speaker. He's also the son, as we now know, of Francis and Edith Schaefer, founders of the Labri community in Switzerland in 1955. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Frank Schaefer, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258 or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.